Where did Ron go?
Oh, like, what's Ron doing?
I have no idea.
He walked in and went,
oh, you're trying to get him.
Yeah, he's trying to get him to speak again.
I get started again.
Do you know what? Maybe I'll just get you to continue and I'll give him after.
Can't wait around.
Okay, everybody, we're going to continue with the rest of the day. So I'd just like to introduce the next, I guess, presenter of the next speaker. And we will get on with the rest of the day. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you want to come up? I'll let you introduce. I don't know where Ron is. So.
Whatever makes you feel good, Danny. Okay.
Hello. My name is Don Chase. And I'd like to introduce our next speaker. I can honestly say it gives me great pleasure to introduce our next speaker. It all started too many years ago when we were fortunate enough to be classmates in the first landscape architecture program in Canada at the University of Guelph. Upon graduation, Ron attained the traditional position of landscape architect with a firm in Toronto. It ultimately led him to an involvement particularly in commercial development. It was here that he first stepped outside the box and created a radically new approach to the urban shopping center, the West Edmonton Mall. This led him to many uncommon format of his being involved, led him to being involved into a number of highly unique, earthbreaking projects with some very forward-thinking and powerful people around the globe. Australia, the UK, Dubai, the United States, and beyond. A man who has never been satisfied with solving traditional design problems, and certainly never happy with standard or cookie-cutter design solutions. His credo is you gotta have a great idea and then the know-how to find the right people, clients, and mechanisms to make it happen. A strong family man, a great inspiration, and a true design maverick, Mr. Ron McCarthy.
Thank you, Don. It helps to have someone introduce you that you've known for 48 years. this is a formal presentation, but I wanted to just take 5 minutes to read something. I didn't want to miss any important information here I have that begins this presentation, so bear with me. I just got to get my... So what is a maverick? A maverick is someone who goes against the norm. Anyone can be a maverick, but as Steve Jobs alluded to in his 2005 convocation address at Stanford University, it helps if you are hungry and foolish. Being hungry is your appetite for finding new and better ways to create wonderful results, whether it's a landscape design, a painting, or a piece of furniture. It's about loving what you do, following your heart, not letting external noises drown out what your inner thoughts or feelings might be telling you. It's your passion, and if you're good at it, it can be contagious. Being foolish is about taking risks and thinking childlike. It's about breaking the mold, finding new ways to look at things, and above all, having no fear. You will make mistakes, but they will teach you the path to success and innovation. Great ideas and their execution are founded on two ingredients, at least in what I've done, and I think they'll apply to you as well. First of all, you surround yourself with talented people who share your vision. I would draw the analogy to a bus where you have a driver and passengers. As you drive the bus, you look for the right people to get on board. It will vary from project to project, but with leadership and vision, the driver chooses the appropriate talent and sets out on a fun and adventuresome journey. Now, I emphasize fun because in the end, that's what it should be in everything that you do. In your world, it could be a great contractor or a great lighting consultant who helps to deliver your vision beyond anything you might have expected. They went there because you inspired them. The second reason is people who cut the check. All great projects in the final analysis is the result of someone who believes in your dream or your vision and releases the funds. Most of you experience this every day with clients. In my world, it's a developer. It only occurs, however, when you've presented a compelling case and release your passion. It also helps when there is no one else between you and the owner. And I'll explain this and demonstrate this in some projects that I'm going to show you a little bit later. Today, I want to tell you my story. It's about dreams and aspirations that started when I was young. It's about learning to take problems, constraints, and issues, and converting them into opportunities. Truth be told, it was in the face of adversity that I sought out solutions that became game changers. Let me conclude by saying that it's also about passion and one's ability to sell those dreams and aspirations. And I hope what I show you will be inspiring and help you to see things differently. So let's get started. I think I'm going to change mics here. Can you hear me? Good. The early years. By the way, in 1947, the year that I was born, the Frisbee was invented. The first mobile phone came out. I also share a birthday with Elton John, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Meat Loaf, and O.J. Simpson. I was born in Chalk River in the Ottawa Valley, the oldest of nine kids, and eventually raised in Thunder Bay. That's our family. I'm on the right. And by the way, if you notice, there's only one girl. Eight boys, one girl. I worked a lot in the bush camps, being from Thunder Bay, but there's a story about the bush camps that actually referred to an earlier presentation from Ron about Mr. Grubbs and his wanting to work for somebody. And at Great Lakes Paper, that was the place for any young man to work. They paid well, and it was bush work, which I liked. And I went to the job office, and they said there was no openings. And I said, fine, starting Monday morning, I'll bring my lunch, and I will stay here till there is. Friday morning of that first week, the guy finally came in and said, I guess you really want a job, don't you? And I said, yes. And as a result of that, I worked in the bush camps for the next 3 years. So it's about desire, about showing that commitment and passion for wanting to work. And I bet he believed that I thought I could do a good job, and I think I did. There's a dated picture, 1970. My first desire was architecture, but I was missing the math, so I said, went into the catalog and went, oh, landscape architecture, that's close enough. Ended up being on the Guelph diving team, played football. But one of the interesting things was that during the course of that great 4 years of getting to know some great people and some great teachers, I went to one of the best schools that I know of. And one of the things that I started with another friend of mine, another classmate, Mike Lakowitz, was a poster business. And that poster started with Easy Rider. And basically what we did is we took a high contrast image of Easy Rider. I can't remember where the photograph came from. We blew it up on an overhead projector. This poster is about 6 foot long and 3 foot wide. And we basically copied it by hand on a wall with India ink on vellum. It was a laborious process. But I went on to do Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Diana Ross, the band. I even did Bobby Orr, and I ended up phoning his mother to get his permission, or her permission, to do Bobby Orr. And at that time, it was just when licensing was becoming a big issue when doing pictures of anyone, especially people who were famous. And I ended up speaking with Allen Eagleson, and of course he said, no, you can't. So, but I did it anyway, and I sold it to people that I knew. Now, there's sayings that I've come across in my business that have been very inspirational to me. And I love this one here because when you really think back on it, it is very relevant. And it's wherever you see a successful business, someone made a very courageous decision. And again, it goes back to stepping out of the box and making that decision. And of course, we know so many success stories that demonstrate that. My first job was being a landscape architect at the City of Toronto. Just a regular job in the Parks and Recreation Department. I was just a lowly guy. But what happened was an alderman at that time, Alderman Bill Archer, approached me to say, look, I'm planning to close down Yonge Street in the summer of 71, and I want you to be my guy to help me design the layout, the planters, the enclosures for the cafes, and so on. And all of a sudden, I realized I was a big kahuna. I was the guy that all of a sudden the alderman would come into our office and say, I want Ron McCarthy, yank me out, no matter what Mr. Kimmel said or anyone else said. All of a sudden, I was belonging to somebody else outside of that little department that we had. And it really taught me a lot. So I was there for a year. Then I joined Michael Huff and Jim Stansbury. This was a great experience because they had just come off of doing Ontario Place. So they were very well recognized. And we did standard projects, the University of Alberta campus. We did some work in Hull. But what I learned working for these guys was that, especially for Michael, is that I never knew what he was going to think about next. Every time I did a design, thinking he would like it, because sometimes in those early days, you design for somebody else, you don't design for yourself. And I would always get it wrong. He said, well, no, how about looking at it this way? And he taught me so much about designing for myself, but also thinking outside the box. And he was a brilliant landscape architect. In 78, I went to Damison Smith. I was asked to be a landscape architect for a very large project that they were working on in Winnipeg called the East Yards Project. And it was a master plan. But it was an interesting experience because I got introduced to Chartwood Developments, and they were, I would call them, the grandfather of shopping centers in Canada, especially Ontario, Mr. Charlie Tabachnik. And I met the project managers there, and they said, by the way, can you help us with some interior landscaping? I said, sure. I knew nothing about interior landscaping. But again, you meet great people that teach you the business. And of course, Bruce Jensen of Jensen Nurseries at that time, I brought him in. And again, he taught me so much about this business in those early days. So in 1979, I decided to start out on my own, because Chartwood were giving me more work, and I realized there was a business here in being an expert in interior landscaping as it related to indoor shopping centers. Now, I was still doing outdoor work, but the indoor was really intriguing because it meant travel, it meant a whole new area of expertise that not a lot of people were into. And I guess in my life, I've always looked for a path where no one else has been. I wanted to be somebody in that zone that gave me an edge when out competing with other people. So again, first clients were Chartwood Developments. This is when I started doing a lot of traveling into the US. I was down in Florida, California, buying ficus nidatus, ficus benjaminas, tagging trees. But what was interesting was that I got to travel and see other things. So I'd visit other shopping centers, I'd visit other projects, and it started to open my eyes to other things that were going on and what other people were doing, especially in the U.S. And also the chairman, Mr. Tabachnik, was donating $2 million to a park at the University of Mount Scopus. And I remember I was over budget on a project in Belleville, an interior project, by a couple of $1,000s. And I got a call from his secretary, and she said, Mr. Tabachnik would like to speak with you. And I went, oh my God, I'm in trouble. So I got in there, and he hated heights. He was on the 20th floor or something. And his whole office was, you know, like his living room. And so we sat down, and he said, have you ever been to Jerusalem? I said, no. And he said, well, I want you to go to Jerusalem. I want you to meet with the landscape architects that have been hired to do the University of Mount Scopus, the park that I'm contributing money to, and I'd like you to report back to me. Anyway, so that was kind of an interesting little junket. Then I had an opportunity. I always used to look in the Globe and Mail, the financial section, and I always look at people who were being promoted, especially in the development field. And Dayon Development were a very large shopping center developer in Vancouver. And I had seen that, I believe his name was Gary Schroeder, had been promoted to be the VP of shopping center development for Dayon in Vancouver. And they had three shopping centers going on, one in Calgary, one in Red Deer, and one in Edmonton. So I phoned him up, introduced myself, and told him a bit about my expertise, and I knew these guys don't have a lot of time on the phone, so I didn't want to go on too long about it, but I said, look, I'm going to be in Calgary, and I wouldn't mind dropping in to give you a little bit about what it is I do. Would you be up for that? And he said, sure, set a date with my secretary. Well, in fact, I wasn't going to be in Calgary. I didn't want him to feel bad that I was coming all the way from Toronto, and so I went right to Vancouver, and ended up with two of the shopping centers, two out of the three. So you never know till you really try, and again, it's about being aggressive, but in the right way. And I had stuff to prove, stuff that I had done. Again, the interior landscape side of the business was just starting to take off. There were a number of people in that zone, but it was really a great launching pad for me in terms of understanding the shopping center industry in a lot better way. But there's certainly a lot more people that were more experts on it than I was, but it gave me a great opportunity. So in my travels, especially out to California, there was a shopping center called South Coast Plaza, and I would go there a lot because I was just interested in the designs and some of the tenants they had and so on and so forth. Then I discovered in this food court, they had this carousel. And again, having that sort of childlike part of my brain that I said, this is a wonderful thing, because all of a sudden now, parents can go in there, mothers, during a weekday. There's music, it's going around, it's color, it's animated. And I said, this is the most exciting thing I've seen in a shopping center in ages. Because most of the shopping centers, as you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you walked into one blindfolded, you wouldn't know where you were. So this was quite unique. So I kept that imprint or that memory bank of that kind of installation in my mind. Then Chartwood came to me and said, by the way, we have been asked by the Gurmesians to join them in developing a shopping center in Edmonton called West Edmonton Mall. And we would like to propose to them that you be the landscape architect. I said, great. So lo and behold, they come back. This is going on now for 2 or 3 months. They came back and they said, we have just been let go from the project. You're on your own. I had never met the Gurmesians. I was just hoping to do this through Chartwood. So I decided I needed the name and the number for a Skander Gurmesian. I called him. I said, I want to come to Edmonton. I want to tell you why I should be the landscape architect on this project. And he said, fine. We set up the meeting. I went there. I ended up with the job. So I ended up in phase one doing traditional landscape design on the inside, but it extended itself because they came to me and we just developed this relationship. They started to believe in the ideas and the thoughts that I had as it related to paving, landscaping, fountains. And by the way, there was still the exterior component, but there was nothing magical about that because they were just all the requirements that the city wanted. And as most developers will tell you, there's very little attention paid to stuff on the outside. It's mostly what happens on the inside. So as a result of all this work, I said, and I just had an office of two people, and I didn't like having a lot of staff. I wasn't good at managing a lot of people. And I said to myself, all right, I need to join up with somebody. This is no word of a lie. This is how it happened. I phoned Steve Moorhead, and we had known of each other. And I said, Steve, would you like to meet for lunch? I have an idea. We sat down in a restaurant on Front Street. I can't remember the restaurant now. And there was Steve, Bob Fleming, Bruce Corbin, myself. And I said, look, I think we should join forces. I've got this project in Edmonton, and I need a lot of help. But I think there's great opportunities. I know they're going to expand it, and so on and so forth. And I had other work as well. And I would like to join up with you guys. But I said, here's the deal. It has to be 25% across the board. We each get 25%. And I didn't want 33, 51. He said, done deal. So literally over lunch, we decided to create Moorhead, Fleming, Corbin, McCarthy to start with West Edmonton Mall. So we finished phase one in 81. Then about a year later, and we had other work going on, and September in 82, I got a call from Iskander. It was on Tuesday night, about 10 o'clock. And Iskander said, we're going to expand the shopping center. We're going into phase two. I want you in Dallas tomorrow to see the Galleria and the skating rink. I want you in Houston the following day, and then back in Edmonton on Friday, because we have a meeting with the architects, the builders, and we're going into phase three. I said, okay. So the next day I was in Dallas, the following day Houston, and then we had our meeting in Edmonton on Friday. And so within those 3 days, I did all of that and saw some pretty interesting things. And I thought, again, they could be done better. And so a week later, as we're working on the location of the skating rink within phase two, Iskander came to me in a meeting and said, we have this area in front of a hometown hardware store we're going to put into phase two. It's about 10,000 square feet. I don't want a fountain. I don't want more landscaping. I don't want more of anything. I want something new. I want something different. Think about something. So that was Edmonton. That afternoon, I flew down to Calgary, and the architect's offices were in Calgary. And I had the key to their place. And I went in, and I started thinking about the carousel at South Coast Plaza. And I said, well, what if I took that carousel, put in two or three other rides, create a little kiddie area, kiddie theme park? I've never worked on a theme park in my life. But I had this notion of doing something, and I'd heard of some other stuff that people tried to do, but it failed. And so in that one night, I started phoning a lot of people, making a lot of contacts, because I never believe in 6 degrees of separation. I believe in 1 degree of separation. And that night, I did the plan. Next morning, flew up to Edmonton, had the meeting with Iskander, and he says, great, let's do it. So I said, well, Iskander, this is great, but I said, and I, by the way, we went from 10,000 square feet to about 12, and we had to move some things around. But I said, look, what we have to do now is you have to come to a big conference with me in Kansas City called IAPA. And IAPA is the big show for rides and entertainment and so on. I'd never been to one, but that's what they told me. So he had to go to Ottawa. I flew to Kansas City. I got a call from him the day before the conference was to start. And he said, Ron, he says, I can't make it. I can't be there. You're on your own. Just go look at what you can find. I said, Iskander, you have to be here. I am not going to do anything unless you're at this conference. He said, fine. So he came the next afternoon. He arrived at 4 o'clock. Have you ever been to this show? It's incredible. Everybody's there. They bring rides. They bring all of the stuff that you'd ever see in any theme park. And by 6 o'clock, he was going crazy. He was like a kid in a toy store. And this goes back to my point earlier about your clients and who you sometimes get to meet up with that inspire you or take this to the next level. So anyway, we had dinner. He phoned me up at 5 o'clock the next morning, and he said, meet me for breakfast now. I said, fine. So we met at 6 o'clock, and he said, I want to make it bigger. So in other words, we've got 12,000 square feet. He says, I want to make it bigger. I said, well, how are we going to make it bigger? This is November. We're opening phase two in August of the following year. They are building the hometown hardware store, and their drainage lines are going in around the base building. Skander said, let's move the hometown hardware store. Now, this is Edmonton, middle of winter. So I said, okay, well, we can do that. We can move it 60 feet. So we started drawing on a piece of paper. He said, okay, let's call Marvin DeYoung at PCL. So we waited a couple hours. We phoned Marvin DeYoung. Marvin, we need to move the home hardware store 60 feet. He says, okay. And Marvin was one of those guys that just got to know the Gimrisians because they made things happen. So from that time, it was just like we started planning, we started looking, we moved the hometown hardware store, they gave us the space that we needed, so we needed to do a lot of planning. This had never been done before, and we're talking November, and we have to be open in August of 83. So in January, one of the companies that Iskander got hooked onto was a Japanese company. For rides. So he said, we're going to go to Japan. We're going to go buy rides in Japan. I said, okay. So I went with the whole family to research the ride manufacturers. And I'll never forget, I was in a meeting with the Japanese. I spent 2 weeks there, and I kept wanting to go to where they made the products. And they couldn't, because in Japan, what they do is they outsource all the components, and then they assemble them all in a shop somewhere. And I didn't feel comfortable with that. So my last meeting, Iskander had already left to go back to Canada. I'm in a meeting, the door is at the back, there's a huge long table, I'm at the end of the table here, all these guys lined up in black suits, white shirts, black ties, going, okay, Mr. McCarthy, which rides would you like to buy? I said, gentlemen, I think you're on the wrong, you're thinking incorrectly here, because I'm on a mission to look at what you can offer me, I need to look at others. Well, you should have seen their faces drop, because I believe they thought they had this deal. They even tried to bribe me, believe it or not. And I said, no. So I ended up leaving, but it was a very uncomfortable trip from that, the end of that table back to that door, because I had to walk by all these guys. And they purposely do that too. So anyway, in the meantime, we're putting this master plan together now, because again, this is all new to us. So we brought in guys from Cincinnati, Larry White, Bruce Robinson, who worked for Taft. And this is the layout, the plan that we presented to the Gimrisians in March of 1983. I won't go through all the components right now. Who's been to West Edmonton here? Just, okay, third of you. So I started going, in February I went to Germany and to Italy because we had to not only design these rides, they had to be manufactured and installed by August the 17th. So I'm in Italy, and I'm working with Zamperla, and Zamperla were saying, you know what, I think we can really do some nice rides for you, we'll design them, we'll get them made for you, no problem. I said, great. And they were very good designers. So I'm in this villa, and so we had an issue between a four-story playground that we were designing and a swinging ship. But the ship kept getting in the way of the design of the playground. We didn't obviously want to be hitting kids as they were trying to climb a playground structure. So I phoned my guys, and they said, Ron, you have to make a decision. It's either the swinging ship or the playground. We can't do both. So I phoned the Gimrisians. They're all at home. And I'm having this conversation with them. And I said, Iskander, you can't do both. You got to make a decision. Okay, call me back. I called them back. We haven't made a decision yet. This went on for about half an hour. I said, Iskander, I need this decision tonight. Call me back in 5 minutes. Called him back in 5 minutes, so I said, what's your decision? He said, we want both. So, okay, you get both. So I phoned the guys back in Toronto and said, guys, sorry, they want both. So we did. Now, I put this up because this is actually a Steve Jobs saying, and I love it. Why join the Navy if you can be a pirate? And I only tell you this because at one example, again, with West Edmonton, we had a great idea. Other people had started it before. Maybe they didn't do it well. Maybe it wasn't successful. But there was a germination of an idea there that I felt I took and made better. And we know so many examples of this today in the tech industry. BlackBerry came out with a great product. The iPhone take it over. Napster comes out. Steve Jobs takes that one over. I mean, there's so many examples of someone starting something, but someone else takes it and makes it better. So again, our asset here was that we had just done Canada's Wonderland. So we had some experience there, but we also had access to two great guys in the US. I mentioned before, Larry Wyatt and Bruce Robinson, who helped us. Now, I should just explain a very interesting meeting when we presented the plan on March the 17th. I had a room full of people that were his accountants, his brothers, project managers, architects, the builders. And in this table, Skander was to my right. I'm sitting here, and I'm presenting the plan for the earlier plan that you saw for West Edmonton, phase one. So after the presentation, Skander goes to the person on my left and says, okay, I'm going to go around the table, and I want to know all your thoughts. Tell me what you think. So we started, and I was listening like everyone going, this ain't going to work. We don't have money for it. You don't know how much it's going to cost. We don't know how well it's going to do. There was maybe one or two that said, interesting idea, but we need to have some numbers. Went around the whole table, came to Skander. Skander slams his hand on the table, turns to me and says, I want working drawings in 3 weeks. It was just their way of doing business. So as a result of that, we ended up doing what was now the first successful indoor theme park anywhere in the world. And it taught us so much. I mean, we made some mistakes. They weren't big ones, thank God. They were small ones. And by the way, I was the first one to ride the Wave Swinger. Just going back, the Wave Swinger is this guy here. And I was the first one to ride it with my big boots on because we had built the numbers, the calculations of the Wave Swinger versus the ramps versus the railings. I had to make sure that people weren't going to hit their feet on the railings. So I was the guinea pig. And of course, the skating rink, which is now famous. And again, they just had big, big dreams, big visions. They wanted the Oilers to play here. And in fact, the Oilers were playing here, and they had to put up netting because the players actually took pucks and tried to shoot the pucks at the retail frontages. Anyway, we were becoming well-known. They were talking about leisure and entertainment now making the big difference in shopping centers, you know, having a new angle. I did something really crazy. They wanted to do a phase three, and their hometown hardware store was not working, so they wanted to get rid of that and convert that into an additional part of the theme park, because the theme park was so successful, the first one. So they wanted to add and take over hometown hardware store and add more space for a triple-looping crazy coaster. So, and I never did ask Steve Moorhead how he felt about this, but I went to a scanner and I said, I'll do a deal with you. If four of us, myself, Bob Fleming, Bruce Corbin, or Larry White and Bruce Robinson, if we can go to a resort and plan phase three, I will not charge you any fees, but you must pay the hotel expenses. He said, okay. So my travel agent found a place that's now a Fairmont hotel called Glitter Bay. We went to Glitter Bay. We brought all our stuff. We brought drawings, we brought boards, we brought everything. And we had 5 days. The guys keep telling me, when are we going to do this again? It was just so much fun. And we never got paid for it, but they paid all the expenses. And these are just some shots of us when we were there. But we were drawing on floors, on tables, and then we'd go swimming. Then we'd go play tennis. It was a blast. This is the way business should be done from time to time. You just have to find a client you can convince. Anyway, that program for phase three included the extension of Fantasyland, the submarines, dolphins, the water park, Parisian Street, and others. And that opened, that phase three opened in 1985, and the hotel opened a year following in 1986. So again, these were all our plans, just coming from scratch. We had never done this stuff before. We were babes in the woods. But it was such an experience and gave us so much confidence in what is possible if you hire the right people and get the right people on your team. And again, this is not something any of us at Morehead Fleming, Corbin McCarthy can claim. We had design, we had vision, but we had help as well. So when we came up with all this stuff, and it's not just the guys who helped us design this, but it's also the suppliers. We went to a guy in Vancouver to help us design a submarine that would work in this circumstance. And by the way, we had a killer whale that was supposed to go into this facility, and of course, that hit the news big time. So I went to a scanner, and I said, this is negative publicity. You can't do this. We have to back off. Let's just stay with the dolphins. Just keep it simple. He said, no. He said, I love the publicity. I said, okay. This is a ship, the Santa Maria. You couldn't use it. There wasn't enough money just to sort of build it out, so it's all really fake, if you will. This was the water park. We had a team of guys, I got to tell you, that just worked day and night to put this together, because this was an absolute nightmare in terms of how to bring three suppliers together to how to see how their flumes would work and make sure they all missed each other. And that's the result. By the way, I'm working on American Dream in New York or in New Jersey, and they're copying the water park exactly. It's been that successful. I have a brother who lives in Calgary. He goes there with his kids maybe once every 3 months. This is the expansion of Fantasyland. This was with a lake, but this is more thrill rides, if you will, triple looping coasters, and so on. And so he wanted to appeal to more of a teenage market with this. A lot of the other stuff we did was more the children's market. So he wanted to hit the teen market with this. But again, guys like Larry Wyatt developed, we wanted to do a Parisian mall, and we did it. It's like, this is thematic design to the full extent indoors, and it's still there. Things like miniature golf. Actually, Doug may not want to admit to this, but Doug Carrick, who worked for us and went on to become a well-known golf course designer, actually designed this miniature golf course. I should put that up on the web. Doug Carrick builds first indoor golf course. Anyway, that's just an overview of West Edmonton Mall. 25,000 parking spaces, very, very successful. Business opportunities are like buses. There's always another one coming. As a result, I was featured on CBC's Venture. I had developers from around the world. I had first class tickets to Australia. I went and started looking at shopping centers in Perth, Sydney, Melbourne. I was asked to do a movie studio theme park, met Dino De Laurentiis in Surfer's Paradise. By the way, just, you know, as we talk about landscape architecture, I don't know if you guys ever had this problem. When I went on television and they interviewed me, so they said, so Mr. McCarthy, what's your profession? And I said, well, I'm a landscape architect. This was in the interview before being filmed. So he was writing notes. I said, okay. Anyway, it goes on CBC, and in the background voiceover, the guy's saying, yes, and we have Ron McCarthy, an architect. I'm going, uh-oh. Morris Sunderland, who was the architect for the shopping center, I got a very, very bad call from him. He was not too happy. But I don't know if you've ever experienced that, but when you say landscape architect, guys, oh, you're an architect. Anyway, that was a bad case of being called that at that time. Here was a good example of how we built our staff up to around 60, at some points 70 people, and all of a sudden, with the opening of West Edmonton Mall, Phase 3, we had no work. These are people who we trained, who had learned so much putting these drawings together, working day and night. All of a sudden, we're without work. We had not planned. We were so busy, we weren't able to plan our next project. And we got stuck. So, and I was also at the same time being approached by 555 to work on Mall of America, which they had purchased the site in Bloomington to do that. It was close to Thunder Bay, which where I was raised, but we decided not to go because it would involve moving the family. So I'm coming back from Edmonton. I'm going, I need work. So I thought, I'll contact Jim Bullock. He's the president of Cadillac Fairview. Maybe there's an opportunity. Maybe he wants to do something. So sure enough, he had a shopping center, Woodbine Center, and he wanted an indoor theme park. So we did that. But what's interesting, he then came to me and he said, look, we know nothing about this business. I don't think we have contractors who know how to build this stuff. We would love to do a design build with you. So I went back to Steve and Bob, and we sat down and said, look, can we put a team together? So we went to Bruce Evans of Evanco, and we started a design build company called Forec. And that's how Forec, I'm sure most of you know Forec, that's how Forec began. Forec now are probably the leaders in leisure entertainment thematic design around the world. I think they have a staff of 150. So we started that back in 1987, 88. And again, Woodbine Center, you know, typical, again, a knockoff of what we did at Fantasyland. But it was interesting because we didn't make a mistake, but Jim only wanted to address young kids. He didn't want to address teenagers. It was not the greatest neighborhood, so he wanted to address families. And what I discovered after this got built was that parents would take their kids to the shopping center and go into the park, but they couldn't participate with them. There was not enough interaction between parents. And so you'd see parents walking around and kids are screaming because they want to go into the theme park. But the parents are going, I'm out of here. I've been here for 2 hours and I'm just standing watching. So we learned some things along the way there. When I was in California, I bought a carousel. David Bradley, one of the premier developers of theme parks down in California, Disney watched what he did, and I bought this carousel in the dark. And he promised me, he said, I'll make this a beautiful carousel. You are buying a premier product. I paid $600,000 for this product in the dark. But he pulled it out, cleaned it up, and it's just an amazing piece. That carousel now at Woodbine Center has got to be worth well over $1 million. So again, using the window and using the Ferris wheel in the window. Again, a lot of the kiddie rides. Thematic design is something we became really good at, building facades, how to do that, and how to integrate that with retail. In the meantime, while this is happening, Thatcher was starting to designate zones within the UK for retail development. It's very, very, very strict in the UK. But these seven economic zones opened up the opportunity to do shopping centers in the UK. And there were three of them being done. One was in Birmingham, one was in Manchester, or Sheffield, I should say, and then the other one was up in Newcastle. So there was a delegation every fall that came over from England from the British Council of Shopping Centers. And when they came in, I would do a breakfast presentation. This is Forec. This is Morehead Fleming, Corb McCarthy. This is what we can do for you. Most of them had just come in from a hangover. If you know the English guys, they came over, they would be drinking beer till 3 in the morning, and then I'm waking them up for a 7 o'clock breakfast presentation. But anyway, I made a lot of great contacts. Then I went to the Ontario government, and I said, look, I want to go to the UK, and I want to make a presentation. We didn't have a lot of money, so I said, can you support us? They said, okay, this is what we'll do. We'll give you a conference room at Ontario House in London. We will pay for your flight. I can't remember what they did on the accommodation. We may have had to pay half or some. And as a result, I put together a whole presentation package. I had meetings lined up in advance through great contacts. Again, people who help you along the way. And I got to London. I had 2 weeks of solid presentations and met a lot of great people. And during those presentations, I met two gentlemen, Eddie Healy and Sir John Hall. Sir John Hall is the owner of the Newcastle United Football Club. He wasn't then, but he had a great idea and a great concept. And sure enough, I was able to convince him that we were the guys to help him do his next indoor theme facility up in Metro Center in Newcastle. So I ended up spending quite a bit of time in Newcastle with the Geordies. You can never understand what they're saying, but we managed to get it built. So this is Metroland in Gateshead. This was since bought by the church commissioners, but again, a very successful shopping center. And thematic design, again, and some of the product, we were just getting so good at understanding how a lot of these things worked, the mechanical implications, HVAC, all that kind of stuff. So In 1987, oh, just before I get to that, I love this one here. The pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity. An optimist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. And in design, that's where success happens, I believe. Look for the problems, look for the issues, and when you can resolve and work your way around that, you'll evolve with a better product and solve the problem at the same time. So I met Mr. Healy at Ontario House, and then I was doing a design for his shopping center in Sheffield, and I had to go up, I did the presentation, and I just landed that day. And he said at the end of the presentation, "You're sleeping at my house tonight, and then we're gonna go out for dinner." And I said, "Fine." So we went out for dinner with his wife, and I'll never forget, he handed me a pint of beer, and he said, "I wanna make you an offer you can't refuse." And he basically bought me out of Forrec, and wanted me to move to the UK to do all the leisure and entertainment at Meadow Hall in Sheffield. So I ended up going there for 3 years, and responsible for the Oasis, sponsorship, Ride of Life, a bunch of other projects, but really got to know a wonderful man and had a great time there. But I did crazy things, like I was down in London at the Trocadero Center, and I found a great restaurant called the Rock Island Diner on the top floor. And it was 50s. You know, the kids were dancing to music, and it was just such a lively place. And I said, "I want to know who did this." So I went to the manager. This was late at night. I said, "Well, who owns it?" "Robert Earl." "What's his number? I need to talk to him." So, "Well, he's running a Hard Rock Cafe out of Orlando. But this is his little sideline, this restaurant." So I got his number, and I phoned him up the following day. And I said, "Mr. Earl, I'm Ron McCarthy, working on Meadow Hall." And I said, "I'm going to be in New York City. I'd love to drop in and see you." Well, if you know the history of my past stuff, I wasn't going to New York City. I was going straight to Orlando. I had a meeting with him. And I basically convinced him in that meeting he needs to put a Rock Island Diner in this shopping center. Not only that, in that meeting he said to me, "By the way, we're working on something really big, but I can't tell you what it is." And it was Planet Hollywood. He didn't tell me at the time, but I knew that's what it was. And that came in very handy later on. Also, the Oasis was designed so that you could have big events in there. You could actually close it down for a period. And what we did after we opened up Meadow Hall, Pavarotti was coming to Sheffield, to the arena. We actually did a deal with him to come into the Oasis. We shut the whole thing down. We had a charity event. It was amazing. And Pavarotti sang in the Oasis at Meadow Hall. And it was one of those classic moments. But this is the shopping center, very, very well positioned on the M1. And great interchange. It was just really, really well planned. But Mr. Healy was one of those guys, I can't tell you enough about just the pressure. He could not get, it was very difficult to get funding for these kinds of projects because the bankers just, this wasn't well-liked by the bankers. So he was ordering steel and paying for it out of his own pocket, which is a lot of pressure. But anyway, it was a very interesting shopping center, well done. This sold, he kept this for, I'm trying to remember when he sold it now. It opened in 1990, he sold it in 2000. He kept it for about 12 years. We built it for about 300 million pounds. He sold it for 1.2 billion pounds 12 years later. This was the Oasis. This was a fabulous space that we worked a lot on, a lot of Mediterranean theming. Again, Sheffield, dull, cloudy, lots of steel works. People worked in the steel mills. It was we wanted to lift it up by bringing the Mediterranean in. This was the Rock Island Diner. My daughter ended up working in here. It was just a fabulous place. Families loved it. Kids loved it. And again, I wanted to find tenants who were an example of what it was we were trying to create in the Oasis. And that becomes very, very important. This was a video wall. We flew on his private plane to meet Philips in Eindhoven. And I wanted to do a video wall because I wanted this big screen. Everything for me, I guess, is big. And this ended up being this huge screen that did advertising. We ran programs in here. We did birthday parties. If someone wrote in and said, "My son's coming in, there's birthday parties," we would put all that up on the wall. It was a fabulous way to interact with the patrons. This was the ride of life. This ended up being half built. This was a 12,000 square foot themed environment that I ended up being on BBC television three times over this project. It was so spectacular. It's actually a discussion for another day because it's very involved, but it was unbelievable. People still ask me about it. But it was designed by these crazy guys down in London who wanted to do a thing called the Ride of Life. And basically, it was a sofa ride through all the things that we do, from shopping to going to a theme park, but in a very funny British way. And at the end, they designed the end, exiting at the end, you went through heaven or through hell. And the choice was, if you wanted to go through hell, you had to pay an extra 50p. So it was lots of fun. I was featured in En Route magazine. They came over and we did a run through on that. I was also featured on CBC. This is actually quite a funny story because the CBC flew over with their staff and they wanted me to go on Venture. And so they're there for a couple of days. Mr. Healy doesn't like photography. So they said, after a couple of days, they said, Ron, we need you in a meeting. We need some confrontation. We need some stuff that's more exciting. I don't know. We're just a lot of happy people here doing some great work. So anyway, there was a meeting coming up on graphics for the shopping center, and there must have been 20 people there. And I asked Mr. Healy, do you mind if the CBC taped this? They said, not a problem. They come in. This guy from London was starting his presentation, and I knew as soon as I sat down next to Eddie, he had a way of bringing people down so bad. He did not like what this guy was doing. All of a sudden, he had this guy crying in his presentation. It was awful for me. But I'm looking over at the CBC crew. They're going, yes, yes, this is good. And I still have the tape at home. I was going to play it for you. But of him and his altercation with the designer. It was crazy. Anyway, I get restless. So within a month of the shopping center opening, I'm sitting in my flat in Sheffield, and I'm going, come on, I need another project, okay? Because once you open a shopping center, people don't want to know about you. You're gone. It's over to management now. So I contacted someone at 555. It was on a wing. We had a glass of wine. I said, you know, I'm going to phone Marion at 555 in Edmonton. I phone her up, and she said, Ron, we get talking. She said, I have a project you might be interested in. The Gamesians have just done a lot of work on it. They've been refused by the German government, but I think it's a deal that can be done if you're interested. I said, Marion, I'll tell you what. I'll fly you over. Eddie will pay. I took a chance. I said, Eddie will pay. So a week later, she flies over. It was a Friday night. She meets with us in the trailers. We were still in the trailers next to the site. She starts going through this presentation on Oberhausen. And it was like, oh my God, if there was a site anywhere in in Europe, this was it. And as a result, and this is Oberhausen, just in the northern part of Germany, 31 million people in a 2 hours drive time. And after the presentation, Eddie turned to me and he said, Ron, go work it out. Go do it. And I'm going, okay, I got a 93-acre site in Germany, and now I've got to do a master plan. And what should that master plan look like? Well, I spent about 3 months sitting down, and I came up with a whole bunch of stuff, and I'll just show you some. This is the master plan I ended up creating. And it was basically a mixed-use development, shopping center, a promenade, an arena, hotel, a theme park. I brought in Tivoli Gardens. So we did the whole thing and presented this to the German government in March of 1991. They told us, you have an hour with these guys, because these were high-profile politicians. And I had guys beamed in I was in Hawaii for breakfast with a guy, Peter Burwash, on tennis. I was in L.A. I had guys in L.A. I had guys all, we beamed them all in. I had it all orchestrated. And I made this presentation to the German government, and they said, you have an hour? They were there for 2.5 hours. They couldn't believe what we were proposing. And as a result, it got opened 5 years later, which is unheard of. And this is now one of the most successful mixed-use projects in Europe. So again, dream big, because if you have someone there who's ready to cut the check and believe in you, it can happen. So this is the project now. The shopping center, I should have my little beamer here, actually. But the shopping center is down the middle with the turret on top. The arena is on the lower left. You can see the theme park up above. That is now being run by Merlin Entertainment. I also brought in, this is going back to Robert Earle. I went back to Robert and I said, you got to do Planet Hollywood in Oberhausen. He said, done deal. We brought Schwarzenegger in, and this was in Dusseldorf, where when we had the model done, and that's Mr. Healy on the right, and that's the city manager for Oberhausen on the left. And we did the deal with Schwarzenegger. This is the shopping center at night. I'm huge on lighting. It applies to what you do, too. Just a big, big lighting guy. It's just this thing at night is magic. This is a promenade. We were forced to put a canal on there. It wasn't my favorite idea because we wanted the park to connect directly to the promenade for various reasons. But they do a Christmas market now. They have 150 stalls on the promenade. And this is one of the most successful Christmas markets in Germany. They get them coming from all over. That's the Oasis building. This is so well constructed. This is Germany. The German expectation for finishes and materials is next to none. It's incredible. And so this has just been so, so successful. This is the Oasis food court. How am I doing for time, by the way? Okay, we got to keep. So there's the arena. Okay. So failure is not fatal, but failure to change might be. So I said, I came back to Toronto and I decided to try something else because someone had introduced me the idea of doing an indoor skating rink. Anyway, I'm going to whip through this one, but this was an idea that never got built, but I still love this product. It's called Center Court. It was all about indoor sports courts. I had a book that was like that thick of the programming that we had for all the different court sports that could go on in there, from beach volleyball, badminton, basketball, volleyball, and it had a retail store, it had a fitness center. I mean, and given now where schools are and where extra programs for kids are non-existent, this is a perfect place for kids to go. We had this thing running 24/7 because there are people on night shifts who also want to partake in stuff like this. So, and then we had big tournaments. We had rain coming in. This would rain every so often. I mean, just, again, theatrical stuff, but it was just a ton of fun. Anyway, I had met some architects in Zurich, and they phoned me up when I got back to Canada, and they said, we have this project in Riyadh, and we want to present our skill sets for the banking side. Can you come and present what you did on shopping centers? Because we think there's a shopping center component that we can build, we can do as well. I said, fine. But they said, you need to do an exclusive arrangement with us. I said, fine, okay. So anyway, as a result, I went, I made my presentation to the prince in Riyadh, and what I did, I got a call about a month later. It's his secretary. And the secretary says, the prince wants you back. I said, well, I've got this deal with the guys in Zurich. I can't. He said, no, he wants you. It's done. Don't forget about it. So I ended up spending 6 months with Prince Al-Waleed helping him in the design of his mixed-use project in Riyadh. And I brought in RTKL from London to do that. A funny story, he wanted to know some of the stores in London, and we had flown in to London and stayed at his Four Seasons Hotel. And he said, you need to show me some stores. This was Saturday night, 1 week before Christmas in London. We get in a van with two bodyguards, myself and the Prince. So I went to Liberty's, I went to Hambley's, I went to Fortran Mason. Anyway, when we got to Liberty's, they were closing. So the Prince went in through the doors, and the security guard said, you can't go in. And I'm going, okay, so I'm not going in. The two bodyguards follow him, and they're in Liberty's. He's looking around, he comes back out. We get back in the car, and we take off. It was a night that was so crazy, but this is the way he worked. He just went, he just wanted to see it. He got it, he had a glimpse, boom, move on. Anyway, that was quite fun. Then I started doing work in Indonesia, Jakarta. I was doing stuff in Belgium, France, Argentina, South Africa. I went to Italy, started doing some stuff in Montesilvano, Catania, Palermo, and then also worked on Cinecittà, which is the movie studio in Rome, living in central Rome. This was a project I did outside of Madrid. It got built. This is a project near Mount Etna in Catania, a shopping center. Again, I brought in LaGuardia Lowe, the architects from Dallas, to help me on this. Then I got introduced to Peter Munk through Greg Wilkins. And that was a great experience. 3 years in London. I worked all over, but primarily in Spain, some things in Italy. They ended up buying the project I brought to them in Montesilvano. But then in 2000, Mr. Monk decided he was going to close up shop and focus on Barrick Gold. Sorry, I'm racing through this just a little bit here. Then I worked with Grupo Lar in Madrid for 3 years, looking at several projects in Spain. But I was instrumental in getting them the project with RCD Espanol, the football club in Barcelona, by doing this scheme here. They loved it. It was a competition, and we ended up winning it. But I basically drove the whole program. And as most of you might know, I did Borrowed Spaces. That started in 2004. I just wanted to do a quality product made out of clear Western red cedar, stainless steel, aluminum. And I had the three themes. That product now, I mean, it was a great period in my life. And I met some great people, most of you who are in this audience, and had a lot of fun. But it got to be a bit much. I'm a designer, not a manufacturer. There's a big, big difference. And as a result, the artistry has taken it over. It is now called, Solowave took it over from Kitchener-Waterloo. It's now called Yardistry. That's sold in the big box stores. However, I've got a new product coming out here, which is made of powder-coated aluminum and fabric, and which was really a product to address the condo market. So these fabrics can be in different colors. The powder coating can be in different colors. Lighting's a big thing in here. I designed a bracket to go on the back of the panel so you can light it up rather than putting the lighting on the deck or somewhere else. It becomes part of the panel. In 2012, I was asked to consult on a shopping center in Iran. So last year, I was in Iran for 2 weeks. That's halted temporarily because of the sanctions, but I've now, as of last week, been asked to look at a project in Tehran. So I'll be going to Tehran. And it's basically what they want is ideas, concepts for leisure entertainment within a shopping center that no one else has seen before. So then in April 2012, I received a call from 555. They said, we want you to come in and help us with American Dream in New Jersey. It was an existing shopping center, not quite opened. It went bankrupt, but they were coming in to buy it. But they had an existing ski hill, never opened, ready to go. So I traveled to the UK, Spain, Dubai, researched the facilities there, and presented the results in 2012. And I had so much fun with this because it gave me new hope that I still had it, because I looked at something that they said they wanted to do, and I took it in a different direction, and they love it. Now, this is the ski hill here. This is the most horrible building you'll ever see. In North America, but as I said, it's 80% built, but they are now building out and fitting out the whole thing. They're spending $2 billion renovating this shopping center and making some additions. They're adding a theme park and a water park, 600,000 square feet. Anyway, so this is their vision or dream for the new facade. They got a Ferris wheel. There's the theme park, water park on the front, and then the shopping center behind. You can begin to see just the existing ski hill that's there now, projecting up into the sky. This is what I did. And this is the extension. I knew I had to do a couple of things. One, I had to make this different than anything else. This is New York. There are hills within an hour, 2 hours of New York. So I had to make this very, very different. By the way, where you see the emblem, Big Snow, that's 136,000 square feet of LED that's on that side and on the other side. Why? There's 110 million vehicles that pass this site every day. And it has views from Manhattan. It's also on the flight path going into Newark. So I said I had to create this big box in the middle that gave me lots of wall space to do LED. It so happens that that building gave me an opportunity to do something no one else has done yet. So we started with the interior. What's really important and why Ski Dubai is so successful is you see from the inside, from the shopping center into the ski hill. People get engaged. It's fabulous. So I had them open up a lot of glazing in the building to do that. So this is a food area looking into the hill. This is the theming against the wall of the building. So, a bit of aspen, Whistler. By the way, the rope tow and everything is in there. The roof, it's all there. So, But then when I got to the top, Iskander wanted a longer hill than Ski Dubai. Ski Dubai's hill is like 1,250 foot long. I said, Iskander, making it longer is not going to make it any better. Plus, the way they designed the ski lift in the existing facility, I couldn't extend it without having problems with the roof and clearances and all kinds of stuff. I came up with another program. One of the most successful things at Ski Dubai is not just the skiing. 65% of the million people that come to Ski Dubai go to Snowplay. And Snowplay is where they have tube balls, tube runs, a play structure. It's so fantastic. So this is what I convinced them of. Now, this is a, I developed in the middle section this bar, this restaurant in the middle. But you'll see some other things I did. I did a big stage. I want entertainment here. And I brought in, I went to Nevada, I brought in Snowpark Technologies. They do all this stuff for Sean White, Mark McMorris. They have their own TV show building all these hills, half pipes. I brought them in to help me design the whole upper section, which is a terrain park. Because if you know snowboarding, the big thing now with young people is the snowboard off of urban fixtures, railings, buildings, walls. I mean, it's really aggressive, but fun to watch. So that's what we did on this whole upper section without touching the existing part. By the way, from this middle section to the upper section, I can now close off what is existing and have an event. Events in New York are big, big money. So a corporation can have an event party there. Skiing, party, big stage. I have an ice climbing wall that comes from the lower level. It goes on and on. I'm sorry. I'm short of time in telling you the whole program. But this, I have a big video wall inside at night. So again, you can see all the people in the midsection. And I can hold up to 5,000 people in that midsection for a big party. I mean, where in New York City in the middle of summer would someone not want to be here partying? And I started doing deals with, I met with GoPro in San Francisco. I've met with Panasonic, Coca-Cola, Red Bull, because corporate sponsorship is another big deal, and I wanted to get them up on the wall as well. So this, I showed them, I did this stuff where I gave them an example of what their signage could look like on that LED wall. By the way, one final thing. This building here on the left, I said at the last minute, I don't know where I got this from, I said, we need a hotel. That hotel sits underneath that structure. The structure was first. So we added the hotel. There is, from the top level of the hotel, a connection into the snow park. So you can leave your room in your ski outfit, and you get on a travelator on the top floor and go straight into the ski hill. I had so many people tell me, I would take my kids there. I would go there just to do that. And so, again, you know, when you're concerned about kids and leaving the site, they never have to leave the site. My last thing here, I'm doing other stuff, but I just want to show you. I came up with the idea with them to bring Santa to New York. And so I went to Rovaniemi, which I'd been with my kids in the early 90s. It's the most amazing snow experience ever at Christmas time. And so I came up with what we call the Santa Express. It starts with a train ride in here, and it goes all the way to the end. There's snow blowing. There's hot chocolate served in the train. You get to the end, and then you go through the North Pole, and then you go into Santa's workshop, and then you leave, and then you get to see Santa. By the way, in peak season, there are 5 Santas in here. The kids don't know that, but but there's 5 Santas, and then they all exit through the retail shop. And this is a photograph of me with Santa at Rovaniemi on the Arctic Circle. By the way, he handed me when I finished this presentation, he handed me a card. It was a business card. And he said, here's your interview with Santa. I said, really? He said, flip this over. And it's a USB that flips over from this business card. It's a little thin thing. I put it in my computer, and it's my interview with Santa. When I did American Dream, I made cards up that said Big Snow on it, and it looked like a business card, but it had the whole presentation for Big Snow, American Dream, on this card. It's very, very cool. Finland's so far ahead on technology, those are the places I've been, those are the projects I've done, and thank you very much.
Sorry. No, good. Thank you, Ron. Some great inspiration there, and I think everybody's going to dream and think big now. It's funny, I've actually been to all those places that you showed in the UK. I've been to them, although I wouldn't mind going to the one in New York now. And before you leave, a quick token of our appreciation. We have a thank you gift for you.
Great. Thank you very much.
And Ron, if you could also come up from the first presentation. And Christine, could I get you to come up, please? So this kind of concludes the first part of the morning's presentations. I'd just like to thank you guys and give you a gift for your presentations this morning.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Some great inspiration. And we're going to take a break now for an hour for lunch and then reconvene with the second half of the day. Okay, thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah.